When I started musky fishing, we made our own fishing line out of goat's hair and turpentine. And we used a raw potato as bait because it was popular at the time and we were real men.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. I've got the guru.
Hello.
And I've got J-Dog.
J-Dog.
J-S-E.
That's my musky rap name.
That is, well, unfortunately, G-Rat was already taken there. So.
Waka, 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 waka.
Waka, waka, waka. Anyway, so a lot of people emailed in after my figure eight rant. Apparently, I just lost my mind last week, Tyler.
Yeah, you got carried away.
Got carried, but in a good way. A lot of people are like, hey, rant away. However, we're going to stay focused, I promise, and get through the rest of the user Q&A. But first off, going to put you on the hot seat, Jay.
Me? Okay.
Need a shield rod update. The shield rod army has been out in full force for the last 2 days. They're going, we want shield rods. We want shield
rods. Not a day
rods.
Goes by someone doesn't ask us about that. I'm just walking and I'm in the store right now. Let me talk to the man here. Hey, Tom, shield rod update? Still late February is what the expected 9-foot deliveries is. Yeah, they're supposed to be rolling in here soon, and they're expecting to deliver them to us in late February. That's the 9-footers. But we're working on 9.5-footers, too.
Yeah, yeah!
I know.
Yeah.
That is the
probably going to be summer. These things take forever to get made and all that, so unfortunately.
Well, you're making so many of them. The signature Steve Paul shield rod 9-6.
So, keep on dreaming.
Keep on dreaming. Now, that is the update, shield rod update for the shield rod army. I mean, there's literally an army of shield rod guys out there. That's what I'm calling you now. It's the shield rod army. I don't know when we'll call you up to arms, but soon. Anyway, that's the update. Yeah, the 9-6s are going to be rocking. The 9s are rocking too. One thing too, because we got a bunch of questions coming in. Everybody started gearing up, and that's one thing. You know, Jay's going to be on the podcast a bunch more because he is the gear guru. Tyler is the musky guru. Jay, you can actually name the barcodes off of Suic baits. That's how well he knows every the number.
I know. I remember when you were helping program Suic entries and just that whole, because it's like there's 500 variants in Suics. You know, there's seven weighted, nine weighted.
Mm-hmm.
There's the standard, you know, 50 colors of painted ones. There's holographic series. There's red hot series. Now there's HI series. You know, then there's 10-inch weighted, 12 custom weighted. Start talking 500 combinations, and it's like, I guess we got room to store them all because they're here and they look good. But
dude, I'll tell you, what he's referring to. I was laying in the middle of the musky shop on my side, just going, Jay.
I got a picture of that. Yeah, I do. I don't know if you ever seen it. I'll send it over to you.
That's legit. That's how lazy I am. I was just laying in the floor, adding Suics to the website. But Jay knows them all. So there you go. We got your shield rod update. Stop texting me. Stop emailing me. They'll be there in February, okay? But get them while you can. That's all I'm saying. You got a pretty. It is in Austin. We've had so many people ask. There's a good number of them showing up. We had a really good number. Really good number of them show up last time, and they didn't last very long. So get your shield rod. Get ready. You have to own a shield rod to be part of the shield rod army, though, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm, you do.
Yeah. You know they're not going to give me my own signature 9-6. Can I at least be like a lieutenant in the shield rod army? Is that possible?
Absolutely. Okay. We got those new America stickers too that just came in. The red, white, and blue ones. Did you see those?
Those are ripping.
I'll have to get you guys one in the mail. Yeah.
Musky
with the American
country.
Flag in the background. America. Musky country.
Mark. Truck nuts.
Hey, there goes Jim, the owner of the Muskie Shop. He's waving. He just went by.
Listen. Muskie Shop truck nuts. That's all I'm saying.
I thought I could get him to say that. Yep.
Listen, get your shield rod. Get your truck nuts. Get you a Merc sticker. Merc!
Right there in the...
Right there in the... Anyway, first up is Lynn. Lynn says, got a Spitfire chatterbait in the mail from the Muskie Shop. What's the best way to fish it, and when should I use this thing? Looks cool. Need info. Thanks. Yeah. Reel it in. That's one thing. I actually... Jay can attest. I'm teasing. Jay can attest. I was supposed to shoot a demo on that. I'll do that. Thanks for the question that reminded me of my shortcomings. Basically, the best way to fish that thing is in place of bucktails, negative and neutral fish, pressured fish. In honesty, those chatterbaits are devastating. Just throw them out, reel them in. Throw them out, reel them in, just like you would a bucktail. Me personally, I'm going to slow things down with that to sort of pull negative and neutral fish up. And the pro move with that thing is ripping it. Like, rip it like a bulldog. Rip, let it fall. Rip, let it fall. Rip, let it fall. Mm-hmm. And then reel it in. I sort of mix it up because, and it's like sort of the water up there. I mean, if you go out on like three lakes or something like that, they're not seeing a lot of chatterbaits.
Nah. Not many guys are throwing those.
Nah. You got your top raiders and your bucktails. You know,
man. Tyler, wasn't that where you demoed that lure when you guys were prototyping those things last year? It was on Three Lakes Chain, because I know you fish there a lot.
Yes, we were demoing them up there, and we're doing pretty good on them.
Yeah,
it's that kind of like neutral stained water, like you can see 4 feet in the water type. You know, it's not clear, but it's not truly stained, right?
Yeah, it's heavy pressure. It's pretty stained. You know, those fish see a lot of baits. You know. So we figured that was a great place to test them out, you know, put them up against the fish that sees a bajillion bucktails.
We smacked them right in the mouth. Smacked him right in the... that's how I feel today, folks. Anyway, Matt says, can you morons... God, we have the... Worst listeners here. Matt says, can you morons explain ticking and clicking crankbaits for me? Thanks from another moron. Meow. Yeah, thanks, moron. Well, I guess we're all morons. We're just all morons in the Shield Rod Army, Jay. It is. What
absolutely.
It is. Anyway, Jay is a 4-star general of the Shield Rod Army. So.
Or I'm something. I don't know what, but. Mm-hmm.
Tyler's Rear Admiral.
I'm private guru.
Private guru privates. Anyway, Matt says he wants to learn about ticking and clicking. So that concept, I'll sort of throw it to you guys here in a second. But that's like pretty much a crankbait secrets thing for me, which is Book Dadarino's book. But, I mean, that's literally like, again, negative and neutral fish that are cover tight, structure tight, is taking crankbaits and getting it into the rocks, into the structure of the lake. So, like, say you're fishing a rock bar, that bait is hitting that. It sort of emulates feeding fish and wounded fish. And basically what you're doing is just taking, like, let's say we're looking at a rock bar and that thing's 6 feet down. You're going to want to put on, say, like a Depth Raider or a Cisco Kid Wrangler or something that's going to run in that zone. So it's actually making contact with the structure, with the rocks. You know, that's the tick and click. So the bait's going, it's actually making contact. Tyler, you do a lot of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a great all year round tactic. It works all the time. I do best on it really well end of August. Basically, I'm just finding those rock humps, looking out there. Okay, the rocks are, it's about 8 foot top on it. Throw out a Depth Raider. You can feel out the rock hump. Ticking and clicking is not too complicated. You throw it out, reel it in, and wait till you hit something.
But
and then you know, okay, there's a rock there.
But there's a caveat here.
Okay.
The caveat is once you hit it, what do you do?
You let it float up just a little bit.
Yep.
And then you start reeling it back in again until it hits again, and you keep repeating that process. So it looks like something's kind of feeding in and out of the rocks. You're not just constantly smashing it into the rocks, grinding it into the rocks.
Get in there!
Get in there! Get over here! Get over here! It's a
I always think about a presentation, and that's just me, but it's like it should look like that bait is stunned, you know, because that's what the muskie's reacting to.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're just sort of going,
I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like if something's banging on something, then kind of fluttering up like it's wounded and it's out of sorts, you know?
Trying to find its equilibrium. Like,
yeah, it looks natural. Looks right. Natural. Whatever it's doing, or it looks like it's dying, looks like it's feeding, whatever it is, looks into them. And they like it.
The thing is this, is I'm sure Jay has had these brought into the shop. The guys that do it wrong, which is just grinding lips into things.
There's no lip on it? Yeah.
just cheese grater. Don't grate the cheese. Okay, say it with me now. Don't grate the cheese.
Like cut or grate?
Either on the boat. I don't want to be around either. Because there is a art form to grinding rocks, okay? Like, if we're trolling and we're grinding it, like, that's headlock. What's that? Big Fork, Jay. Reef Digger, right?
Reef Diggers, yeah.
That's a grindy bait. You know, it's a little bit different. If I'm going to grind rocks and I'm going to keep in contact with hard bottom, which is always my goal in life, is keeping close contact with hard bottom. I'm going to stick with a metal lip, but you know, if you take your Lexan lips, like your DRs, your baby DRs, all that stuff, you know, I don't want to be banging those into the rocks continually. You're going to get busted lips. You're going to get chipped baits. You're going to crack stuff. So use the right tools, you know, and if you're going to grind rocks, it doesn't have to be a metal lip bait, but you're going to have a way better time. You know, for the, and that's like people that are trying, you'll hear about, you know, we're going out on Lake of the Woods in the fall and we're grinding rocks. You know, we're continually making contact. Don't take those concepts and apply it to casting and go, why are my baits broken? why is everything broken?
Some baits are made for it. You're not going to do that with the crane bait, for example. You know, they're not designed for it. You know, a crane bait's false to wood and a light little lip. And
dude, I did it. I mean, this is just like yesterday. My boat is often a travesty in the front, just crap everywhere. And I just kicked a crane. And I love crane baits. Everybody that listens know this. I'm not knocking it. But I just like kicked a crane bait across the deck. It stuck to my shoe and there the lip came out. I was like, oh my God. You know, it's just like, that's the nature of the bait. There's baits that you abuse and there's baits that you baby, you know? And so what are you laughing at?
I've seen the travesty firsthand. It's hilarious.
That's called I'm like losing my mind. It looks like a bomb went off, you know, and at a tackle show, and it's just crap everywhere, and that's usually the deal. But anyway, moving on. Parker wants to know, do you think that blade color or skirt color matters more when buying bucktails? I like that question. Somebody take
that. Is a good question.
Yeah. I have an opinion, but I want to hear what you guys think first.
Okay, go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, all right, I'm first.
Okay. Paul is
I have come to the conclusion.
Sorry.
So, nobody puts baby in the corner.
Tyler, please continue.
Please.
Okay. So I am kind of under the assumption now. I'm not at the conclusion. I'm a scientist. Never conclude. But color really doesn't matter. Yeah. I catch fish on stained water systems on all black bucktails, and then the same day I'll catch a fish on a completely chartreuse bucktail. I think it more relies on the vibration of the bucktails, not necessarily color. Like you could go with like a topwater lure. I catch a lot of fish on black topwater lures, but I also catch a lot in like white ones or chartreuse ones.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think it matters as much. It can matter. say on like super sunny days, you might want a more flashy bucktail as opposed to a painted blade. That's just kind of my two cents on it.
Here, let me jump in the fracas here. Just on one other thing. When it comes to blades, here's my take on blades. A lot of pressured fish respond better to painted blades, right? Because if you think about it, Jay, when did Cowgirls come out? Showgirls, Cowgirls? 10 years ago?
Yeah.
10, 11?
Closer to 15, I think.
Yeah, God, I'm getting old. You know,
I'm too young to remember that, boys.
Oh, pathetic. Listen, I remember Eagle Tails, you know, before they were redone. It's one of those deals where, you know, if you take blacked out blades or you take flowage green blades or blades of a different color, you will see fish respond in a different way on pressured water, right? That's the trick for me is you go, okay, if I'm fishing something that's heavily pressured, again, you know, three legs, all that crap, I'm not going to throw a bucktail that's got silver blades. Just not going to do it because what is the majority doing? Throwing silver blades with some skirt.
Right.
So it gives you a different look in the water. That can actually trigger fish. I think if they're dumb and they're not pressured, I don't think blade color is really going to matter.
No.
And it's just one of those things of like, you know, you look at the store, how many bucktail variants are at the store? How many bucktail variants are in the store, Jay? Hundreds?
Oh, it's hundreds.
Like, if you look at Spanky, so Spanky Fireball, like, if you take all their blade colors and all their skirt combos that you can end up with, it's you really can't get through that. And I think that's maybe what a lot, we get asked about color so much, and especially bucktails. You look at it and you go, you really can't pinpoint like that is the color because there's just too many combos, like, you know, whether it be like Trilogy or whether it be Spankies or whether it be Booker Tails or Mayhem, all these people, they have so many colors. There's variance amongst the bait manufacturers. There's variance amongst the thing. The only thing that I can tell anybody, if you're considering color on bucktails, is this, is be mixing it up, because however, whether it might not be a predominant color choice on a body of water, there's days that it can matter though. Tyler, we've seen that, you know, you've actually seen that on Lake of the Woods with me in the boat where it
That's
was
true. With the clown pattern. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it was, it matters, but not all the time. There are certain situations where a color pattern will just be like, well, I guess they're only eating that freaking
that
color.
That day,
and mm-hmm. then that's it, and it'll never happen again. Like the clown pattern, I've never seen it work again.
I mean,
but, you know, that's the way it goes.
What I've notorious for taking bucktails and tearing them up, where I'll have different blade sets where I can just switch them on the boat. So it'd be like black blades with a white skirt, black blades. If you've ever seen the MEPS has their double eights, and they're built with a split ring in the middle. And so I actually have basically an experimental box. So say we're moving fish, we're not moving fish, and we're still certain it's bucktail conditions. Because that's the other thing I'm going to say is this, is people go out with bucktails all the time, and they go, I don't have the right color, right? And what does everybody throw? Topwater bucktails, right? That's it. And they're going, well, I don't have the right color bucktail, so I must need to get more bucktails. Well, it's probably not bucktail conditions. You're probably just fishing the wrong bait. You know what I'm saying? It's just like up your game a little bit and go, okay, I'm going to try a black and silver bucktail. I'm going to try a few different variations. If they're not moving on bucktails, it's time to get the crane bait out. You know,
that's a great point that you brought up. You know, color, say if they're not hitting bucktails, color doesn't matter, you know, but if it's like a real bucktail dominant day, start trying different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll see maybe this color is more dominant over that one. Try different vibrations. Mm-hmm. But with color, I don't know.
No, it's
some Joe's always said, I mean, Master Joda's always kind of pointing out the fact that color matters at times. There's something about maybe, you know, a sunny day, direct sun overhead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's doing something to that water. That's doing something. You know how when you bring in baits, sometimes they have that, there's like a halo around them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like maybe when something like that's kind of, it transforms that color into something goofy, positive or negative. I don't know.
But no.
Like you guys said, you know, it's like clown. And for those, I mean, a clown pattern is mm-hmm. a really ugly combination of unnatural, yeah. bright, goofy colors, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like, that did it for you guys that day. You found something that worked, and they were responding to it. It doesn't happen all the time, for sure, but, you know.
It's one of these things when color matters, it matters. Most of the time, it doesn't because you're still going to, like, you've just got to be, and like what we're always harping about, stop doing the same things expecting different results. You know, don't mm-hmm. don't sit there and gut it out on the same color bucktail all day long. If you're moving them on eights, you know, there's things to consider. Is it color or is it blade size? Is it bait profile size? So, you know, that's just one factor. I'm sitting here saying that it doesn't matter. I'm looking at a wall of hundreds of bucktails that look like a menagerie of every color on earth, though, too. You know, I'm sitting here
basically
looking.
What we're saying is we're undecided. Figure it out.
Well,
probably the number one thing with bucktails is the sound. The number one triggering thing has got to be
the
sound it's putting out. You know what I mean? Yeah. What those blades are doing, if it's a single, if it's a double, and all the oodles of different blade combinations out there. It's they all do something weird to the lateral line of fish, you know?
In the order of like magnitude of things you should consider when you're picking out a bucktail is vibration, size, and then color.
Yeah.
What color?
When
I choose a bucktail, I don't really think about color first. I go, okay, I want what vibration do I want? And then what size for the body of water I'm going to be fishing? And then on that body of water, based off past experiences, what kind of color combinations do they have in that size and vibration? How I choose my bucktails.
Do you know how I pick a bucktail? Does that son of a gun start? Is that what I care about? Like, it's just like, I'm not going to sit here and pull start stuff all day long.
Well, like you said, size too, you know, it's like I went fishing with a guy that I work with. I'm not going to name his name, but he kind of talks like this. And opening day on a cold spring, opening day musky, so it's Memorial Day around here.
Right.
Water's even colder than normal, and he's throwing double 12s, and he's bringing them in fast. I guess he just wanted to try it out, but I was like, I mean, I didn't want to tell him what to do in any way, shape, or form, but it seemed like a completely opposite, you know, first choice for triggering something.
I would definitely say bold move, Cotton. It's a bold move. All right, Jake says, spring is right around the corner here in Ohio. I've seen many anglers do well on 1 ounce or smaller lipless cranks. My question is, what type of leader and length would be best for a bait that small? To my understanding, it's best to roughly match your leader size with your bait, but I haven't seen leaders that small. I'm just going to go here and say this.
Hmm.
If I'm fishing something as small as a 1 ounce lipless crank, I don't want a super short leader. They're going to inhale it, right? Gone. And I have fish cranks that small. I'm going to go with a fluoro leader, right, to keep it limber and keep the bait action. But I'm still at least a 12. Just to protect the fish, because I, you know, those little baits, man, if you see bass anglers get into a muskie, a lot of times on those tiny rattle traps, they're just gone, you know. So
I'm not using any short leaders either, man.
Yeah.
For either. No,
12. It's
12 inch minimum.
Yeah, 12 inch minimum, and that would be the take there. Also, too, try some of the musky size, like the Lungeon rattle traps. You know, I know they're not as small as that, but the thing when you get into those tiny little bass rattle traps is they're not beefy enough for it. You know, they're just not a stout enough bait. But yeah, at least have a 12-inch leader on there going. There's some of the thin, you know, if you're worried about bait action or weight, like I said, fluorocarbon's going to be good. Some of the multi-strand wire stuff the shop has, Jay. you know, there's some pretty limber stuff. Can you think off the top of your head some of the multi-strand wire, like the seven, what is it? Who makes that?
Seven strand, yeah, 90 pounds common. Mm-hmm. You get down to 60 pound, that would be nice for rattle traps, mm-hmm. you know, small 1 ounce baits, MEPS number fives, you mm-hmm. know, like that half ounce early season bucktail presentation. But 60 pound kinks pretty easy. If you, mm-hmm. you know, you get a pike on that, there's a good chance that it won't be straight and that they're really kind of difficult to straighten out after that. But right. 90 pound, you don't have to worry about that. It's really tough.
There you go.
That's a good all purpose. I mean, before fluorocarbon, that's all I used was I made my own leaders out of 90 pound flexible seven mm-hmm. strand wire, you know, never had any problems.
No, not at all. Mr. Dude says, hey guys, love the podcast. Obligatory. I recently bought a Bitten Tackle Warlock and a River Run Manta, and they are sick. I don't know how long he's got a lot of season K's in there, so I think that felt long enough. Sick.
Cool.
Yeah. I was wondering what
good glide baits.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, no worries. He said, "What I was wondering what situations you would use the Manta, the Warlock, a Phantom, Hellhound, or Glide Raider."
Take it away, Cold Front Steve Awesome.
Cold Front Steve Awesome here, checking in. Okay, let's go backwards. Glide Raider. Okay, notorious bait. We'll just leave it at that. It's got a thing. Glide Raider is, in my mind, a Canadian bait in most situations. It is very buoyant. It's going to hang forever and sort of float up. Really good on reefs. I'm talking shallow reefs, stuff that's topping out real quickly. You know, it's these rocky flats. Tyler, I'm thinking of Iron Jaw.
Mm-hmm.
Locations like that, which is like big rock bars that come out, flat zones, you know, shallow water littoral zones. That's a glide rider thing because I need the hang time in there. Pop, 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 pop. Hellhound Phantom. Is somewhat similar. Hellhound can go faster, in my opinion. Phantom is a great hang time bait. Obviously, mm-hmm. the Softail's caught a billion fish. Moderately interchangeable in my book. I like the Hellhound because of the sink rate. And the one thing I'll say about a Hellhound is I like the action of a Hellhound when it's falling better than I do a Phantom. If you got a good one, it's got a little bit more rock in my book. It's sort of like 6-1 half dozen another, though, when it comes to those two baits. And again, you can't argue with the versatility of the Phantom, though, with the inskirt weights and things of that nature. So it's tough to pick between the two of those. But if I'm thinking Hellhound or Phantom, the conditions I'm going to be using those are, you know, basically from ice out to ice up where you guys are at. You know, that's a rock solid, either of these baits. Manta, Warlock, quickly. Warlock is a fast bait. You know, it's moving. That bait does not like slow reeling. I know you can do it. The small ones especially. The 10-inch Warlock is definitely a quicker bait. For me, if they're not moving on bucktails, like we're just talking about bucktail stuff, right? If we know muskies are in this weed bed or on this rock bar and they're not really moving on bucktails, I'm going to grab that Warlock and move it in there. Pop, pop, pop. Give it a pause. Pop, pop, pop. A little speedier of a presentation. So I'm using the Warlock for active-er fish. I'm making up a word here. But fish that should be a little bit more active, but maybe they're holding a little bit lower or tighter to cover in structure. Warlocks, when they come into play. Manta, here's my thing. I'm going to go on a diatribe on Manta. Mantas are notoriously bad for hypnotizing muskies. Right? Mantas seem like they will move fish. They're almost shum-shum-esque, where a shum-shum or a manta seems like they will move a fish that nothing, this fish will not move for anything else. But a shum or a manta will move them. The thing with the mantas is they're a somewhat quicker bait, and they seem to get hook fouled. Quick tip is this, and it's what I do with all kinds of baits, is I take little hair rubber bands and I will pin that front hook on that manta to the body with a rubber band. It'll keep it off your steel leader. The thing with this and finding a good manta and tuning it up is to get this thing to strike on the pulse is watch your manta and see if it will spiral down, right? It'll corkscrew. And what happens with mantas, people are always like, I fish mantas and it moves a lot of fish, but I never catch them. with it being a quicker bait, you need to pick up your line quicker. People work it too fast. And because it hook fouls, people don't like to let it pulse. So here's the pro tip of the week for you is bind that front hook to the body with a rubber band, you know, a little dental rubber band, a hair rubber band, and allow that bait to actually pause. You'll see that bait does not fall straight down. It will curl down, corkscrew down. That's how you catch fish on a manta. When do you use a manta? Is I'm going to look at using the manta over shallow rocks again in those situations, or if you are just like fish will not move. If you can't get them to move, you've tried everything in the world, break out a manta and give it a run. I think that covers it up. Next up is Dawn. Dawn says, how do you guys feel about musky tournaments? Tyler, how do you feel?
I'm not the biggest fan. It's just, I don't know. It's just, you know, competing for money kind of takes the fun out of it for me. It's a little bit more stressful.
Yeah.
That's like... I always seem to catch fish the day before the tournament when I'm scouting, and I can never catch fish the day of. That's just the way it goes. I'm not really into them. I don't foresee myself doing anymore.
Here's my problem. I am completely indifferent in most regards when it comes to tournaments, right? But it's just like, why? You know what I'm saying? It's like, why? Why are we doing this?
Well, I'll tell you why. I mean, guys like to compete, you know. Right. Some people really, really enjoy that. But for others, it's stressful. You know what I mean?
I don't.
It's like, there's a pressure to perform there. And it's just like, I don't know, fishing's supposed to be fun. So if you enjoy the competition and the camaraderie and all that, that's awesome. But if you do it and you don't feel good afterwards, maybe you should just go out and fish for, you know, fish for fun. I don't know.
I mean, when you mix in money and fishing, right, it's going to get
bad. Things can happen. People that actually make their money back at that.
Yeah.
You know? So keep that in mind if you want to hit the GoPro and, you know, hit the tournament trail.
GoPro. There's no pros. That's, you're kidding ourselves. You show me more than five guys that are paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying guiding. I'm saying as a quote unquote professional musky tournament angler.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
There's a few.
Matt Raley works here. Helps out occasionally, and Nate Osfar is part of. They've been dominating for years.
They're just bad to the bone.
Yeah, I mean, somehow they make the top three almost every tournament. So they get some pretty good money out of that deal. I don't know. I think they've won two or three Rangers and this, that, and the other thing.
It's a weird scene. But the thing is this, like you said, the camaraderie. I know a lot of guys that fish the leagues up there, you know, and it's a good way to meet. Men.
Well, Elmer does that. Yeah, they got a weekly league out of Eagle River. That's where Elmer resides, and he loves his Eagle River Tuesday night leagues.
Heck yeah. I suck so bad I'm afraid to compete. Isaac says, I'm just curious, do you have any advice for water that is really green from field runoff come midsummer? You've covered clear turbid and stained tannic water, but does green water differ, do you think? I figure the muskies in this lake have to bite at some point, even if it's green. Whew. There's a lot of... we have to extrapolate through conjecture a lot of data here on what is green.
What is green? Is it the top 5 inches of the water column, or is it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or Lake of the Woods algae green.
Right.
You know, that like algae bloom kind of top level.
You know, and like you said, field runoff... Is there a chemical issue here or not? What I would do is go over to your Muskie 360 app and check your collar chart there under the 101 and start from there, right? I don't think what I have in my head as green water, I don't know if it's right. That's what we're all getting at. I don't struggle in water that is green, like a natural green. That usually means there's a lot of nutrients in the water and a lot of biomass. you know, whatever, your zooplanktons, whatever the heck. You know, a lot of crap going on that is positive. Again, though, when it's if it's field runoff, that could be very bad. You know?
Like that. I'm thinking like big globs of green algae because I see that up here around Stevens Point. When I think of green, I think of like the Lake of the Woods, late August green.
Right, that pea soup.
Like, might as well not fish there because you just can't see anything.
Well, here's a good point. Yeah. Take that because here's the thing, Isaac, is if it's field runoff and it is a negative, let's say it's a chemical runoff, they're spraying – you know, whatever, some herbicide, some insecticide on these fields. Insecticide. I don't know what an insecticide is, and I don't want to know. It's very southern. But as far as what is causing that, because what Tyler deals with on Lake of the Woods is there's an algae bloom that will actually push muskies out of a location, right? So you need to consider, is that the scenario? Because Tyler, explain that real quick, that algae bloom, what it does to the fish.
Well, it globs up, and it actually just, they can't see. It's, I'm not sure if they have trouble swimming, if it gets really big, but it's just, they, like, if we can't see, they definitely can't see. They have to hunt off their lateral line, so they're most likely going to, on North of the Woods, not North, Lake of the Woods, north. They go north. They go to the clear water on the northern part of Lake of the Woods, so avoid that algae bloom.
Right.
And, you know, it's just it's big, it's gross. No one likes fishing in it, and I don't really know any guys that, like, catch fish in it.
Right, the muskies are avoiding it.
If it is like that, leave.
Yeah.
Just leave. Go somewhere else.
Well, and that, you know, again, with what information we have, you know, if it's the entire lake, they have to be there. Like Jay, you said, hey, is it the first 5 inches? Is it the first 2 feet? You know, if it's not too toxic, go for a swim and figure it out. You know? Jump in there, put a camera, put a GoPro under there and see. That's one thing too. I've seen lakes where it's like, looks swampy, and then under it's pretty dang clear. Figure out some stuff. I would love to, Isaac, if you got any pictures, send me a follow-up so just we have maybe a clearer trajectory to focus on there of like what actually we're dealing with there. Like I said, I'm conservative with that field runoff. If it's got a lot of pollutants in it, those fish are going to probably go as far away from that as they can, if they can get away.
I just thought of this because with that runoff, there's going to be a lot of phosphorus in it, creating massive algae blooms. If it's like that, they're going to be deep. Mm-hmm. In my opinion.
Yeah. Just running for cover going, this is bad. Okay. Next up, Isaiah. We have an Isaac, then an Isaiah. It's getting very biblical. What type of lure would you recommend for a beginner besides a bucktail? Jay, take it away.
Say again? Elmer just walked in. I just got distracted.
Stop drinking at work, Jay. That's what happened. Jay had a mini blackout, everybody. What type of lure would you recommend for a beginner besides a bucktail?
Besides a bucktail.
Don't say topwater.
Definitely not a jerkbait. It would be a crankbait. It would be a shallow-running crankbait. You know, some kind of minnow bait.
Yep.
7-inch slammer.
There you go.
Jointed shallow raider. Booker shallow raider.
Mm-hmm.
Crane 207.
Yes.
One of those. Jerk baits are too difficult for true novices to master.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a Suic, you know.
Oh,
not to mention, I mean, I got a friend that I fish with every year, and he just doesn't get Suics. And I guess I just haven't caught a fish in front of him on a Suic enough to drive the point home. They don't look like they're doing a whole lot. But you got to provide all the action, you know, like crankbaits are going to provide their own action, you know,
cast
for
and
the
retrieve,
most part.
Cast and retrieve.
You can do it that way and be successful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, you look at if bucktails and topwater are musky 1.0, right? Crankbaits are musky 2.0. Glidebaits are 3.0, right? We get into big rubber 4.0. And then you get into your true jerk baits, your Leviathans, your Suics, your, you know, that's a different ball game. You know, it really is, because you have to be able to tune the bait, and you have to understand application. But yeah, I mean, Tyler, anything that crops in your head other than a crankbait, or that pretty much spot on, you think?
I was gonna say crankbait. Yeah. We can't say topwater because it's basically the same thing as a bucktail. It just floats. I'd say crankbait, man. If you want to just try something different.
Plop 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 plop. add another option in there, you know. Everybody's got to have a tail plopper, but don't do what we're trying to avoid here. Is don't do what everyone does. They ain't hitting bucktails. Let's try top raider. They're not hitting top raiders. Let's throw a bucktail. That's the big move, boys. You know, it's just like there are other baits. Don't be a bait owner. Be a bait user. And Jay, one thing too is like you said, like the 206, 207 cranes. We were talking about that's probably not a beginner musky bait for me though, because like if you're making bad cast and banging that off rocks, I would go the slammer. You know, talk about, you know, slammer's just a rock solid bait that it's not going to leak and it's not going to bust.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would be thinking. You know, and then you go from straight cranking that thing to learn how to twitch it, you know, and then you can get into some more of the finessey things, because it's like if you look at every bait style, you go from like run of the mill stuff, you know, it's like, okay, shallow. If you were to ask anybody walking around up there, name a shallow running musky crankbait, they're probably going to say shallow raider. You know, you got your beginning baits, your staple baits, and then you get into these more esoteric baits. And that's one thing I've seen a lot of beginning musky anglers do, is they get real excited about spending as much money as they can, and they buy some esoteric glide bait and some, you know, freaking oddball crankbait, and they go, I can't catch fish. You know, those are finessier baits within those bait families. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, again, the guy was asking about the gliders, man. You know, I cannot stress enough, if you're not a glide bait fisherman, start with a Hellhound or a Phantom. That's like number one, you know. Then you go to the Warlocks and the Mantas and the Glide Raiders and all the other stuff. But have those baits that you know they're going to run out of the package. They're going to be good. Dawn says, stock muskies versus naturally producing muskies. Behavior differences, if any, particularly muskies that are stocked where they don't reproduce. Green Bay. So, I mean, it's Tyler. Is there natural reproduction on Green Bay? Do you know? Is it one of those up in the air? Everybody's saying it is. It's not. What's the deal?
I think there's a little bit. I'm not a biologist, so I have no idea. I can't speak on it. But, you know, what I've learned with some of those stock muskies is that they tend to school up a lot.
Yes, sir.
That's a big thing. Natural muskies can do that. I've seen it on Lake of the Woods. Mm-hmm. But it's not very common for natural born muskies to school up a lot. But with those stock lakes, if you catch one, there's gonna be another one definitely around there somewhere. Well,
most of these stock fish spent the first year of their life together.
They spend, they're just in a tank going, hey, you a muskie? Yeah, hey. I'm gonna swim by you.
Hey Dave, it's me, Tom, how you doing?
Hey, you want to swim over here by me?
Let's swim in circles together. I'll meet you out there on the lake. Hey, I'm a muskie too. Yeah, I mean, that's stalkers are schoolers. I mean, that's the best rule of thumb you can sort of throw out there, which you do see that applied, like I said, on Green Bay. Debatable. I mean, I think anywhere you dump, anywhere that can sustain muskies can usually, in general, sustain some natural reproduction and stuff. But it seems like
some.
They're going to try. You know what I'm saying? It's the Jeff Goldblum. Life finds a way. But it's one of these deals of like, you know, God, you'll see it though on like anywhere in Canada, you'll go and hit these spots and you'll be like, you know, you'll find years or places where it might hold a couple fish, but sometimes these stalkers will gang up like wolf packs.
Ooh. Gang.
Gang. Musky pike. So yeah, that's my take. I think in general though, I think naturally producing fish are a little more savvy, you know, out the gate. I'm not talking conditioned fish. I'm just going, they're not as dumb. You know, I'm not saying stalkers are dumb. Don't get me wrong, but that's just my take. Sam says, when casting with a depth raider, How do you know when to go into the figure eight? I seem to do it too early, but yet I don't want to wait too long so as that it comes up to the rod tip with a musky following.
God. Oh, man, not the figure eight again.
The figure four. All right, everybody, here I go. All right,
I liked what you said last week about, man, you went on for – you had some great detail last week, I will admit. That was some interesting stuff, Stephen.
You're welcome.
You crazy dog, you.
That's the thing, though.
You were talking about watching your line, how the line looks different. It reacts differently, you know, when it's getting close. Throw that bait enough, you know, you'll know it's 10 feet out and you can start, you know, your process.
And the thing is this, if you're fishing, the toughest thing is fishing cranks like that, deeper running cranks, whether it be a depth rater, a 50 cal or a 22 long, you know, mm-hmm. a Cisco kid. The trick of doing a good eight with those things is definitely not getting them up to the rod tip. We've got a deep following fish and now we're just going to get him up high real fast. Huh? Not the good play. Is let's say I'm running, we'll just stay with the depth rater. Say I'm casting a depth rater and she's running 6 feet down. I need to eight and do my oval or eight with that line still down there. So you've got to get a feel, again, this is the only way to do it, a feel for where that bait is in relation to where you're casting. I mean, that's all you can do. You can watch for it, but if you're fishing, you know, tannic water, come on. But the way to do that is if your rod angle is appropriate, my rod angle's down at, say, a 45-ish somewhere in the area. I'm cranking along here. Well, when that bait's coming in, your line is out away from you. As it's approaching the boat, your line angle is descending. You can watch it, right? So your rod tip's stationary and practice it one time on the lake. Don't worry about the fish. Just watch how the line comes down. It will go down, 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 down because you've got that bait on a shorter leash, right? And so the bait's out here on the cast. And if you really think about the angle from your rod tip to where that bait is, as that bait gets the lowest point of its dive curve, the angle's changing, and as it's coming through that dive curve, it's getting a little bit steeper, a little bit steeper, a little bit steeper, and as it's coming to the boat, it's narrowly vertical. You've got to know where that shift is, right? So the line is coming out of the rod tip away from the boat, and it's going down, 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 down. You'll get a feel for where that bait is. That's the only way I know to do it is there's not some grandiose trick.
One thing I did, if I interject here,
no.
Stephen. No. Hanging
done.
Up, I'm done. Feelings hurt.
I have spoken.
Trash.
What
I used to do when I was a kid to kind of get a good feel for it is I would actually close my eyes as baits were coming in. I'd let them run right into the rod tip just so I could, because you could see it visually, but what I think is really important is memorizing what that bait feels like when it gets 10 feet out, 9 feet out, 8 feet out, knowing what that feels like, because I fish a lot of stained water. You mm-hmm. just cannot see anything.
No.
So visually, like seeing stuff with your eyes really doesn't help that much. You have to feel it. And one thing I would do is I would close my eyes and go, okay, and guess where that crankbait was and let it float up to the surface and go, oh, it was all the way out there when I mm-hmm. thought it was right at the rod tip. That's a trick that I think you should try. And then once you memorize what it feels like, then start working on how to time it in the figure eight. So say it's 10 feet out, put your rod tip underwater.
You know, that you can, and that's the thing is you cannot, there's not some like, hey, this is the hot tip. There is nothing that will replace doing it because the two things you cannot teach, no matter how many podcasts we do or how many articles everybody writes or how many videos, all this stuff, you cannot teach rhythm and you cannot teach feel. Those are two things that are intangibles in fishing. That
you have to figure it out yourself.
That
you can't teach it.
I can lead the horse to water as much as I can. I can lead you there, lead you there, lead you. I watch clients daily, surprised by baits and surprised by fish. Right? you just got to get used to it. And that's one of those things. I might have said it last week or at some point, like, rhythm and feel are a couple of those factors that guys that are real good at this, they got it down and they just naturally have it. You can get better at it and you can focus on it. But again, most people just don't focus on this stuff. They go, here comes my bucktail. Hope there's a fish there. So, you know, more on that later. All right, Kyle, last one, because I got to pick Jody up from the airport. So, Kyle says, hey, guys, I'm sitting here bored thinking about spring fishing. I got some new crankbaits for Christmas. Hashtag best wife ever. Do you think it would be more effective to troll or cast with crankbaits in the early spring? Thanks for helping, guys. Look forward to another year of podcasts. Kyle.
First question, what kind of crankbaits?
First time caller, long time listener. What? What kind of, he said crankbaits. He said they're new, Tyler. That's what kind they are.
They're new. Okay. They're new. I was hoping to know if they're shallow or deep, you know, an early season, especially if you're like, if he's in Wisconsin, I don't know where he is.
Yeah, and where you're fishing, you know. Well, he's like, there's guys in central Illinois that are fishing these, you know, shad infested, you know, where it's just like trolling's the tick. You know, you're chasing these, you know, I mean, yeah. Even early season, I hear guys throwing tiny crankbaits to start off the season out there trolling, you know, but it's like around here by us in northern Wisconsin, casting,
yeah. I mean, if you have a real shallow running crankbait, you could troll it over those shallow flats. Like, say, if it goes down, trolls good at like 2 feet or whatever, real slow, you could troll it over those like shallow areas where the muskies are going to be in spring. But if they're like real deep running crankbaits for spring, man, I don't know.
Well, he's asking more, should he troll or cast? And you,
I cast.
The conventional knowledge in early spring there is to cast, right? Because the fish are up stupid shallow, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the thing is this, what I would do is, you know, this is our, or what is it? Ortega taco shells, where the girl goes, why not both? Is that the commercial? Have you seen this? I don't know if they air that up there. They're like, do we want hard shell tacos or soft tail shock tacos?
I think that's a Southern thing.
And they go, why not both? Whatever.
I have no idea what he's talking about right now, Tyler.
Just listen. You guys got to put up with my idiot, you know. I'm part of the package deal here, folks. You got to put up with me. Anyway, that's what I'm saying. Why not both? So if you start out casting and nothing's happening, guess what you should do?
Go trolling.
Here's the trick, though. And I'm immediately thinking, if it's early season, you said hashtag best wife ever. Well, if she's a great wife, she got you a 5-inch slammer. Because that's what I would be rocking and rolling with. I would think a lot of those food shelves in shallow areas, you could come back there and decimate the first break. And I'm talking getting skinny and running those things. You know, Tyler, I don't know the laws up there. What you can run, what, 17 lines per boat trolling? I'm kidding.
Unlimited
trolling line.
And most of northern Wisconsin, besides a couple counties like Price County, you are only allowed one line per person, three lines per boat maximum.
I would get me two dummies and stick them in the boat.
Yeah. I like doing the same thing too in spring. Run a bucktail shallow, crankbait out on the break, and then something in the prop wash.
Again, because here's the trick. You hear it every year, and I've heard it for years. Well, it's a slow spring. They're not smacking up in the flats. They're not hitting my double tens on opener. You know, it's just like the same old story, the same old crybaby, and, well, they're not eating, you know. I can't get them. I've got my 8-3-1 reel with double nines on, burning it. If you're not catching them casting, do something different. Get out there. If you, like I said, get your freaking mannequins and put them in the boat, or go to the muskie shop and get Elmer. I'm sure he's lonely. He'll ride along with you. And give him a cup of coffee and said, hold this trolling rod. I will tell you the situations that I run into is, Tyler, a lot of these zones you'll see, like some of these lakes where it comes off, it's very shallow, but that break is pretty decent. You know what I'm saying? It's a good, it's a good taper. You can get the boat in there. Those muskies will be laying there. That six, if they're cracking up in the 2, 3, 4, 5 foot zone, if they're not there, guess where they are at? They're on the first break. That's where they're at. Don't come crying to me and say, where are they? That's where they're at, Tyler. That's where they're always there. But that would be my move. Try and mix it up. You know, they also too, it's a, you know, they're not in the woods. That's my other favorite thing. Well, where are the muskies? They definitely didn't crawl out of here. They're in the lake somewhere. We've got them trapped. You know, we got them right where we want them. Anyway, gentlemen, I have to go grab Joe DeReno from the airport. For everybody that listened last week, I'm sorry for my hour-long rant about figure eights. Do either of you ding-dongs have any parting words of wisdom?
Well, like I said, I am at work right now, and I was going to try to grab Elmer because I know I was listening to the podcast a few weeks ago. You talked about not Elmer's words of wisdom. What do we call that?
Not
deep thoughts with Elmer.
Deep thoughts with Elmer.
Elmer, you got any deep thoughts for the podcast? Yeah. Let me put him on speaker here. He's coming up.
This is live unscripted. It's too hot for TV.
Nothing yet. He's got phone call.
Uh-oh.
Kind of busy in here. Sorry.
The guru says, when the water is hard, lures bounce.
Lures bounce. Anyway, that was pathetic, gentlemen. We will see you next week.
Bite me on the sucker. Bite me. I'm a bait chucker.